You guys remember I'm an alcoholic?
Yeah.
Got sober on April the 28th of 2007. This is my home group. Like Clark said, I got a sponsor. It's funny, I got sober on April the 28th. He got sober on January 6th. We both got sober right after holidays. They were just a couple months apart from each other, maybe about a week after the holiday. And, you know, but I'll tell you what, like, I mean, it's kind of funny. When I was growing up, like, I hear a lot of people in AA talk, you know, just about, you know, feeling different or having, like, different interactions with people, things like that. And, I mean, I can closely relate. I grew up just outside of Los Angeles in a little town called Camarillo. And the first place we lived was actually on the second floor, an apartment. And my dad worked on the first floor. It was a mortuary there. So we lived, like, above the funeral home. And so, like, it was always weird when I asked kids, like, to come hang out or, like, spend the night or something. You know, they'd always be like, oh, my mom says I can't, you know, or whatever. And, so on the weekends and stuff, like, my idea of humor would be, like, I'd run down there and I'd jump in a casket or something and scare my sister. And, you know, so just, like, I mean, things were just a little different. And, you know, and so I used to get in a lot of trouble at school, which didn't really make me alcoholic. But, you know, I kind of started this trend of things because I learned how to talk to people really well. I kind of found out quick that if you just speak confidently and, you know, like, assert yourself, you can usually get your way, maybe even get out of trouble a lot of the times. And so when I picked this up when I was probably, like, in third or fourth grade, maybe. And so, like, as I was getting in trouble with stuff, I would just kind of, like, push myself out of it, you know. And the school called my parents one day. They called my mom, and they were like, Mrs. Loftus, we think your son is a genius. And I was like, whoa, you know, like I could dig it. And because I never really did anything good in school. And so we got, like, all these standardized tests and different things lined up and stuff like that. And so I went and I took all these tests. And then 2 weeks later or so, and it was a high ride in 2 weeks, man. I'll tell you what, like, because we were waiting for the results to come back. I was like, Ma, I need a sandwich. I'm a genius, you know. And so, like, the test results come back in the school. They call my parents back in. They're like, Mrs. Loftus, we think your son is retarded. He's still going to have other classes to go to. They're just not going to be advanced classes. And, you know, so that was kind of just how everything went. No one really ever knew what was going on. And, like, eventually we moved to the Tampa area. And, you know, I got the opportunity of having my first drink when I was 15. And in all truthfulness, I couldn't tell you what some of the things I did earlier this week. I couldn't tell you what I wore or anything like that. But I remember that night really vividly. And what happened was, this was a Friday night, and it was right after a high school football game, and me and three of my friends got together at my friend's house. And we got this liter and a half of Jack Daniels, and the four of us sat in this guy's kitchen, and we lined up these four shot glasses, and I remember we poured them all in. And I'm sitting there, and I'm in this guy's kitchen, and at this time I'm 15 years old, I'm 5'4", I was, like, pushing 180 pounds, and my body still hadn't hit, like, this lifelong change that everybody goes through. So I was short, I was fat, and I had a high-pitched voice. And, you know, I'm looking at these shot glasses, and I'm, like, wondering what's going to happen, you know. And I was kind of thinking about, like, when I was a kid and I was growing up, sometimes my parents would go play cards, like, over at their friend's house and stuff. And you know, they're not alcoholic. They're just normal drinkers. And so they would go, like, have fun and, like, laugh, and, you know, no one went to jail or cried or anything, and they would just come home. And so I was kind of expecting something similar to happen, but there's all this, like, this stuff just flying through my head. I got just a lot of stuff that's going on. And, you know, so what happened was, it got to be my turn with the shot, and I picked this thing up, and I just threw it back, and I didn't really know how to shoot whiskey because I was 15. And so, you know, I didn't know that you just swallow, you know, you just throw it all down. So I've got this whiskey, like, in my mouth, you know, and it burns real bad. And other than taking it in one gulp, I just took it in, like, two or three swallows. So it hurt, you know, and I got this nasty, like, whiskey grimace on my face. And, you know, I can feel it, like coming down, you know, just like this. And it's real hot. And it's just, like, burning the inside of my chest, like, violently. And it kind of, like, settled down into my stomach. And, man, a couple moments later, I just felt all right. You know what I mean? And, like, the closest thing I can kind of compare it to is, you know, there wasn't anything that was really different. I was sitting with the same people, and I was still 15, and I was still short, and I had a high-pitched voice and everything. But I was just more comfortable. I mean, it's the best way I can explain it. And it was on, like, a level of comfort that I hadn't really experienced previously. And, you know, like, so that was okay with me. And I don't know if I could say I was alcoholic right from the get-go, but I can tell you that night, I couldn't even tell you what happened, actually. I woke up the next day, and I had, like, vomit all over my shirt. And, you know, like, I'd puked and not got to brush my teeth or drink anything. So I had that, like, vomit throat, you know, where, like, your throat just is, like, kind of burning and you got that gross taste in your mouth. And but I was like, I'll do it again. You know, like, I mean, why not? You know, vomit throat's worth it. And so like, I had to get a ride home from my dad. And, you know, like I said, I never really did too good in school, so it's not like I was a hotshot around campus or anything. But, you know, school just wasn't that important as it was, but it was, like, now even less important for sure. And there's just more things that were more important to me. And by the time I was halfway through my 11th grade year or so, you know, the principal is telling me I'm not going to graduate, you know, all these different things and blah, 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 whatever. I wasn't really listening. And but somehow, some way, by the time it got to be the end of my senior year, I had pulled my GPA up to a tenth of a point over where it needed to be. And I got an 800, or actually, I'm sorry, an 820 on my SAT. Most of those points came from writing in my name and stuff. And so when I graduated, I couldn't go to a Florida State University. My grades were too poor, my scores were too bad. It just wasn't going to happen. And so my idea was I was going to go to community college, because I know that if you get a two-year degree, you can get into any four-year college in the state of Florida, like any public university. And so that was a plan, you know what I mean? I was just going to work, and I was going to get a two-year degree, and that was going to be it. So the problem is, though, is like I drink violently. And so by the time I was 18 years old, I'd been graduated from high school maybe 6 months. I picked up, you know, some charges, and I've only been drinking at this time for like 2.5 years, right? And so I have to go see this counselor for probation, whatever. And we go for this, like, intake discussion question kind of thing. And he says to me, he's like, well, you got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was thinking, like, what? You know, I'm 18 years old, far too young, obviously. I'm not even homeless because I've never left my home. I still live with my parents. And, you know, like, I've never been divorced, or I don't have any illegitimate children because I don't even have a girlfriend. And, you know, but so, like, this idea of going to Alcoholics Anonymous is totally ludicrous. But I was really convinced that AA had some kind of an inside track with the state of Florida, and it was another way to get money because probation is all about money, right? And so, that's what I was convinced of, and I had this paper to get signed, and like I didn't know at the time that I could just sign it. I was so convinced on this idea that there was this conspiracy with Alcoholics Anonymous going on that I thought the people that signed the paper like reported back to the people like in the probation office and stuff. So I legitimately went to these 10 meetings, but so I had 6 months to do it. And just like a really good, responsible person, I waited until the last week of the 6 months, and I went to all 10 meetings in the same week. And I remember after the very first one I went to, I called my mom right afterwards, and I was like, Mom, I'm so happy that I'm not alcoholic because these people are so goddamn miserable, you know? And so, you know, but I left there, and, you know, so here's the situation is, I sat in Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 meetings. I didn't listen to anybody. I didn't pick up any chips or get a book or get a sponsor or even find out what alcoholism is. It turns out that being young, never living by myself, never like having a real girlfriend, none of those things have anything to do with alcoholism. What alcoholism has to deal with is like I have this bodily difference between alcoholics and non-alcoholics. And for me, my body's a little bit different chemistry-wise, I guess you could say, because when I put alcohol into my body, there's like this craving that sets off, right? And it doesn't matter if I just drank yesterday or if I drank a lot of yesterdays ago, I still have the same reaction. I put alcohol in my body, I'm going to put a lot more in my body before I stop. And one of the other things that makes me different from other people is I have this strange mental twist where even though I have this succession of bad things that happen when I drink, and honestly, by this time in my life, there's a lot of them. I've only been drinking for a couple of years, but there's everything that could go wrong is going wrong at this point. And with full knowledge of that, I might tell myself, I got to tone it down, or maybe I just got to stop for a little while or something. I will drink again at some point. And that's ludicrous. If you think about it rationally, there's nothing tangible nothing tangibly good that happens when I put alcohol into my body. There's not money that comes out of the sky. I'm not graced with superhero powers or anything. So if there's problems that are happening in my life as a result of my drinking, for me to actually have the thought that this time will be a little bit different or I could just drink successfully is absolutely ludicrous. And those are the things that make me alcoholic. Those are the things that separate me from people that aren't afflicted with this ailment. And but I didn't know that, right? Because I never asked anybody. And so, so I went on my way, and just real long story short, bad things kept happening. And I couldn't get a job, and I kept dropping out of school. And my parents had moved away at this time, and they didn't really have a whole lot of money, but they were having to pay for like all their stuff plus all my stuff because my mom didn't want me to be homeless. And this went on for a couple of months, and eventually I got an ultimatum that I was either going to move in with them or, like, get a job and be a real person. And so the choice was easy, right? Of course I went and moved with them. But they had moved up to Buffalo, New York. And so, and this is in December of 2005, and I had this really great idea. I had this big blowout party and, like, shaved my head and, all this wild stuff. I didn't realize, and I, like, got up to Buffalo with flip-flop shorts and a shaved head. And, it was a totally different world, man, I'll tell you what. And, but I was really convinced that, like, if I could just get away from Tampa, And the truth was, I'd been milking moving away from Los Angeles ever since I came to Tampa. That was obviously my problem, was that we moved across the country. If you guys would have let me stay with my aunt and uncle, I wouldn't be this way, jerks, and really, like, that has nothing to do with it either. I was really sold on this idea that if I could just go up to Buffalo for a couple of months and kind of save up some money and clean up and just get free from everything, that everything would be all right. I'd get the job back. There's this girl I've been dating for a little bit. She'd come back too. Just everything would be okay. So I got up there and I made it, honestly, for probably like 3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And I went from having no job here to having two jobs up there. So that 3 weeks was really consumed with a lot of kitchen time in the restaurant. But I started to get some paychecks, and I was like, damn, I got to go get drunk, I finally had some money, and there's some people I could hang out with up there. And my mom, she works for the FBI, right? So there's all this, like, really illegal stuff that's happening under her roof that would, like, get her fired, And that's, like, a career, She got good, like, benefits and, like, retirement program and stuff, and, all going by the wayside because she has a degenerate son. And so I lived up there for 10 months, and, my dad grabbed me one day, and he sat me down in the living room. He's like, look, don't give a shit what you do. You absolutely can't do it here. Good talk. See you later. And I came back down here to Tampa. I had $50 in my pocket, and my sister said I could crash on her couch for a couple months to get back on my feet. Almost 2 years later, I finally moved out. But what started to happen was there's this wild stuff that started to happen. And with that wild stuff, so I'm 21 when this is all going on. And, just a few years before this, I was kind of like just a bright, shiny kid. But now, like, I'm 21 years old, and I'm drinking a liter and a half of whiskey a day. It's for $8.99. It's Old Crow. It comes in a plastic bottle, right? And when you go to a liquor store, there's this cash and carry. It used to be cash and carry. It's Sweet Bay now. But there's this cash and carry liquor store right by my house. And I'd go there every day, man, and right on the bottom shelf, liter and a half, Old Crow, $8.99. Boom. I mean, you can't beat it. You'd be a fool not to. If whiskey that cheap, why wouldn't you? And, these things are going on every day. And the ability to live, no. The ability to be happy, no. And the daily routine was usually something along the lines of, I would wake up in the morning, but I wouldn't wake up all the way, right? Like, I would just be kind of conscious, but my eyes would still be closed. And I would always just think to myself, like, damn it. It's just be so hard. It's be so hard today. I would do anything to trade places with somebody. Anything at all to just not have to feel all this stuff and fit the billion thoughts a day and everything, right? And I would hope that I was dreaming. I wouldn't really awake. And my eyes would crack open, and I would just, damn it, It's going to happen again and again and again. And, so more things started to happen. And real long story short, I had a bad night one night. And when I got home, early in the morning, late at night, whatever you want to call it, right as my head was hitting the pillow, I prayed or thought or whatever it was, I just said, God, something in my life's got to change, or I just don't want to wake up in the morning. And, you know, I didn't grow up in a religious home. I'm not really too familiar with prayer or anything like that. And the next day I woke up and I still had that same instance in the morning where I went through like the mental gymnastics of getting out of bed or not. But I was so just viciously angry that I was still alive because there was nothing different in my life. I woke up the same person I went to sleep as. But I got this opportunity a couple months later where I'd get to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the opportunity was this. I'd gone up to Buffalo over Valentine's Day in 2007. I was just up there for the weekend. And the Friday I went up there, everything was going really well. I woke up. I was in a good mood. I didn't drink all day long. Didn't even think about drinking all day long. It was a beautiful day. It's February in Tampa. It doesn't get much better than that. And I get on this plane and I fly up to Buffalo and I have this like really great dinner with my parents and everybody's happy and, you know, kind of neatly forgetting all of the terrible things that have happened just so we can have some family time for the weekend. But that Friday night I was sitting on their couch and I got a little bored and, you know, I started to like call some friends that I knew from up there. And it got to be, you know, 10 o'clock and I grabbed my dad's car keys and I was heading for the front door. And my mom, she stopped me right at the door, and she's kind of a smaller lady. And I hope I never forget, she put her hands up on my shoulders here, and she looked me right in the eyes, and she said, "Ryan, I don't care where you go tonight or what you do, please don't get drunk. That's not what this trip is about." So I told her she had nothing to worry about, you know, because I didn't think that she did, but she knew. You know, there was definitely no hiding what was going on. So I went out that night, and I walked into this restaurant I used to work at, and the manager saw me. He said, "Man, it's great to see you. First drink's on me." And I said, "Sounds good. I'm going to get 4 Long Island iced teas." And I sat down and I drank all 4 of them. The last thing I remember from that night is being at the bar across the street. I had 10 shots of whiskey in front of me, just going down one by one by one. I'd got to this point in my drinking where sometimes I could drink forever and just never get drunk. I mean, bottle after bottle after shot and just never get drunk. And then sometimes I would have like 2 drinks and like blackout. You know, I wouldn't wake up for a day or two. And, you know, so it was really hit or miss on what one was going to happen. But I used to really pride myself about being able to drink people under the table. So it was funny because I started, whenever I would start drinking with people, I'd really always like think to myself, "Man, I hope it's not going to be one of those short nights, you know? Like, I hope I get some longevity out of this one." But apparently that night was one of the shorter nights because, you know, I don't really know what happened. But so I woke up the next morning and I'm in my parents' front yard and, you know, they like pull me up by the shoulders and they bring me inside. And I didn't know it at the time. My mom told me after I'd been sober for a while, but, you know, she told me that morning that she couldn't wait for me to leave her house. You know, I hadn't even been up there for 24 hours. But, you know, alcoholism is just pretty disgusting. And, you know, we act in pretty disgusting ways when we don't have some kind of a solution for the problem in our life. And so, you know, I went upstairs to sleep it off and I came back downstairs. And, you know, my parents were sitting in the living room, and my dad asked me this question that he'd asked me, you know, hundreds of times before in my life. The question is, what the hell is your problem? So I said to him, I said, "You know, I really don't know, but it just seems like I can't stop getting drunk." And, you know, truthfully, I don't really know where that came from, because, like I said, I learned at a young age to lie really well. I learned how to lie and be aggressive about it so you'd believe absolutely everything that I ever said to you. So that way you never really had to, like, talk to Ryan. You know, you just talked to some imaginary person. But that afternoon or morning, whatever it was, I was willing enough to just tell this person that I had no idea what my problem was, but the symptoms were I can't stop drinking. And really, I thought I was crazy because I was having all these thoughts about killing other people. And like, there was this elementary school by my sister's house, and I would think a lot of times about running my car into the elementary school so I could kill myself at the same time. And it would, you know, be in the news and the newspapers and stuff. And like, people that had done bad stuff to me would be like, "Damn, I wish I'd have been nicer to that kid," you know? And like, those are really the things I was looking out for. And so I really just thought I was a lunatic. I didn't know I was just alcoholic. So real long story short, my dad's boss's wife, and my dad and his boss, they've been working with each other longer than I've been alive. But this guy's wife, she'd gotten sober like 9 months before this. And my dad, he tells me, he's like, "Look, call this lady Kim. She's an Alcoholics Anonymous. She can help you out." And it was ironic because, like, I'd been thinking about AA, you know? Not that I thought I was alcoholic the first time I came in, but for some reason there was just something about AA that seemed a little bit different, you know? A lot of people told me that I should stop drinking, but no one ever really told me how to do it. But it was just in the back of my mind. You know, like, maybe I'll just check it out or something. Who knows? What's the worst that could happen, really? So my dad lines me up with this lady, and she takes me to this meeting on a Tuesday night. And truthfully, couldn't tell you, like, what the meeting was about or anything. But what was real important to me is that after the meeting, she took an hour out of her night. She's got family at home and stuff like that. She took an hour of her time after the meeting had already been over. She got me a book, a big book, and a 12-12, and she sat in her car with me, and she 12-stepped me. She talked to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, and she didn't talk to me about how much of a loser I was or, you know, how upset my parents were, like how I dropped out of college three times, she didn't go over any of that stuff with me, but she just talked to me about what her life was like before Alcoholics Anonymous, why she came, and then just in 9 months, what her life had been like now. And she like really hit me with a good close, and she was just like, if you don't believe me, read this book, you know, just part of it, just read some of it, and if you relate to it, this is probably a good place for you. And so I went home that night because I was curious, because I wanted to see what had happened to this woman, and I just read a little bit of the book, and I read, the doctor's opinion was kind of too wordy for me, I didn't get it, and I started reading Bill's story, and I was like, you know, I've never even been in New York City, certainly never been rich or successful or anything like that, but I could really relate when he would talk about terrible things in his life happening, but he makes some comment about cocksureness, you know, like this time is going to be the time, you know, and like I could just relate with that. And so I just kept coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to another meeting the next day with her, and she lined me up with this guy that brought me to this meeting when it was in the church down the road. And, you know, I was really kind of apprehensive at first because the guy was really trying to sell me on like this, yeah, it's a young people's group, man. And, you know, cause, and I was like, really? You know, it sounds kind of stupid. And so, you know, but I came with him because I didn't have anyone else trying to hang out with me at the time. And so, you know, we came here. And, you know, it was really weird because, like, when I got out of the car, the first thing I noticed was just it seemed like there were a lot of people hanging out in the street smoking cigarettes, and a lot of those people seemed to be really attractive women, and I was like, damn, I might be alcoholic, right? And, but this, like, a couple of guys, you know, just a handful, started talking to me, and, you know, probably didn't know if I was a newcomer or just from out of town or, you know, what the deal was, but just noticed a stranger. And I, like, when I go to another meeting and I tell people that this is my home group, the next thing I tell them after that is I'm so proud of this group, not because of any, in specific, I feel like it's really hard for someone to come to this meeting and not have someone talk to you. Like, if you come to this meeting and you look out of place or something like that, I really feel confident that my home group will talk to you. You know, we may not have 100% success rate, so if that didn't happen to you, my bad. But I feel that we do pretty good about that kind of stuff. And, I mean, that's important to a lot of people here, is to talk to those kind of people, because those are usually the people who need to be talked to. And, you know, so, you know, really, the people started talking to me about sponsorship. They asked me hard questions, like, do you want to stay sober? And I would say, yes. And then they would say, do you have a sponsor? And I'd say, no. And they'd say, why? And, you know, so I really got kind of hassled about this sponsorship and this home group and this service and, you know, stuff like that. But I'm really happy about it, you know, because truthfully, I got a lot of good values instilled in me when I was willing to hear them out. And so the quick spiel is that, you know, like I said, there's certain things that make me alcoholic. You know, I have a mental and a body difference from other people. And so if that's your affliction, the book makes it pretty clear. If you find that you can't control the amount you take, or when you honestly want to stop, you can't, then you're probably alcoholic. It's a too simple quiz. It's pretty easy. If you answer yes to those questions, then the solution is, we have a solution in Alcoholics Anonymous of the 12 steps, right? And so the 12 steps ultimately, through a process, lead me to some kind of power that's greater than myself. And call it whatever you want to call it. We don't have any kind of religion or denomination here. But that's the deal, right? And in turn, because A is free, basically. I mean, you can put a dollar in the basket. It's recommended. I mean, you don't want to be a jerk and take something for free. But, I mean, AA is basically free. So the only thing you got to do is, after you start to not have to drink anymore and not have to wake up in the morning thinking about how you can't go through the day anymore, the only thing you really have to do is do it for someone else. And so I remember actually, I think I had just moved from the Brandon area out to like the Egypt Lake Lato area by the stadium. And there was a Monday night meeting over at 3333. And it used to be a meditation meeting, right? We'd go in and we'd read some stuff and there'd be meditation and discussion. And it changed formats. And I was so pissed off. I was like, this is so, you know, it was like 10 or 11 o'clock on a Monday night. No one's coming to it anyways. Why do we, you know? And, but the guy that wanted to change it in case some newcomer showed up. Cause you know, like you show up to an AA meeting and people are meditating. It's like, what the hell is going on? But so that was why he wanted to change the format. Right. And, but I just kept coming because I didn't have anything else to do on a Monday night, and he wasn't there, 1 week. And so he asked me to chair the meeting for him. And so I'm chairing this meeting on a Monday night, and I mean, it was probably 5 or 10 minutes after the meeting started, and someone knocked on the door, and then it stopped, and no one came in or anything. And so me and the other people were in there, were like, you know, it's serial killer, or someone doesn't know they can just come in. And so a couple of moments later, like, there was another knock, and then the door kind of, I mean, like, cracked open, you know, and there was, like, a head that kind of poked through, and he was like, can I come into your meeting? And it was like, well, yeah, sure, obviously, you know, come on in. And so he was like, so, I mean, he was going to get drunk that night, you know? And he was like, didn't want that to happen. He was so scared that he was going to get drunk that the fear of coming into Alcoholics Anonymous was less than the fear of alcoholism itself, right? And so when that happens, there's an opportunity to get sober. And so it was really just kind of out of circumstance, you know, someone that was afraid to come into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting would just kind of poke their head in and ask if they could come. And, you know, so it's been kind of cool to watch Clark be sober for the past 3 years. Because that's, you know, I mean, honestly, it's kind of an AA story you don't hear too often, where someone just randomly comes into a meeting that's 45 minutes away from their house, and they're sober for 3 years. You know, so that's, I mean, that stuff's kind of neat. And that, I mean, it means there's proof in the pudding. For sure. So, you know, with that, I'm really excited to be here and celebrate the anniversary, and thank you guys for having me.